KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The life and legacy of Pope Francis is being remembered after the Vatican announced his death Monday morning. In 2022, in Rome and on Canadian soil, Pope Francis apologized to Indigenous people for the Catholic Church's role in the residential school system in Canada and for the abuses they suffered. The apology included Pope Francis saying he was sorry and asked for forgiveness. The schools operated from the late 1800s to the 1990s. His apology was met with mixed reactions. Pope Francis was 88 years old. Bison are being restored to tribal lands across the Mountain West and the Great Plains. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports, a herd managed by a city in Colorado is playing a big role.
A few bison jumped into a grass-lined trailer. They were heading to the Kiowa tribe in Oklahoma. The bison are part of two herds that live in mountain parks owned by the city and county of Denver. And the city gave these 10 away so the Kiowa tribe could start its first herd in over 150 years. Bison were hunted to near extinction in the 1800s. Rick Williams is Oglala Lakota in Northern Cheyenne and was at the bison transfer in March. He says it included a ceremony and a song for a safe journey.
The buffalo were a sacred animal to us. You know, we knew that they provided all of our economy and our lifestyle and everything that we needed to survive.
Denver's donation is part of a larger effort to give surplus bison from conservation herds and national parks to tribes to restore cultural and environmental connections. Over the past 7 years, Denver has given 140 bison to 10 tribes. That includes the Northern Arapaho in Wyoming and the Northern Cheyenne in Montana. I'm Rachel Cohen.
Native young people from across the country are representing their communities on a national level this year. They were picked as champions for change by the Aspen Institute Center for Native American Youth. The group is sharpening their leadership skills while highlighting stories of impact from tribal communities. KNBA's Jill Freitas has more.
Each year, CNAY selects five inspirational youth, ages 14 to 24, from across the country to serve as champs, supporting their development through experience-based learning and tailored advocacy training. One of the champs is Myrook Jones from Unalakleet. Jones is focusing on environmental issues. She's studying environmental science at Western Washington University. She says she's been invested in climate change and its impacts on rural communities since a young age, and has seen changes to her community through her own eyes.
I think over the time I was growing up, you can't help but see those changes in the environment. I was a kid, I used to be able to set crab pots on the sea ice with my dad. We'd go out on a snow machine and we'd set crab pots a few miles out. But the last time I stepped foot on sea ice, I couldn't even walk more than 10 feet before it got too dangerous to even go any further.
Jones and other champs took part in a gathering in Washington, D.C. earlier this month, where she heard many stories similar to hers from different areas across the country, from clean water to subsistence to limited resources. She says she knew that she wanted to be a voice for her region and to help find solutions.
The changes in the way from how I grew up to now has really led me to pursue environmental justice and dedicate time to that, because I think it's really important to ensure that future generations are able to hunt for caribou and fish for salmon like I was able to, and to be able to bring those things back to my community is really important to me.
Champions for Change has been around for more than 10 years. This year's youth leaders are all in their 20s and also are from Hawaii, Oklahoma, Michigan, and Arizona. I'm Jill Freitas.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow, a live event taking place April 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Expo New Mexico, featuring song and dance, Trader's Market, Horse Parade, Stage 49, and more. Tickets at gatheringofnations.com and at the gates.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is a life and death situation, and every single one of us, we are not waste.
Protesters visit Congressman Nick Begich's office to support Medicaid funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 21st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, federal employees in Juneau who were fired and reinstated have been fired again.
It really sucks feeling like I finally got like a really good job and it's not my own fault for it getting taken away.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Go to dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn about road, airport, and facilities projects across the state. You can zoom in on projects in your community using the interactive map, view traffic impacts, download data, and look at construction photos that will update all season long. Visit dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
A few dozen protesters visited Alaska Congressman Nick Begich's Anchorage office today. They were there to object to a plan he voted for that would make a major cut to the portion of the federal budget that's primarily Medicaid. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Many of the protesters work in Medicaid-supported jobs as caregivers to vulnerable Alaskans. They wore black trash bags to make a point. Organizer Judy Jessen is with the Caregivers Union, SEIU Local 775, and explained the symbol.
We look silly wearing trash bags trying to take care of somebody because our work is not wasteful. As a matter of fact, we know that Medicaid care services specifically are some of the most efficient services that you can have, right?
Right!
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 The demonstration is part of a week of daily protests aimed at different Trump administration policies and timed to match the congressional spring recess. Many of the Medicaid protesters also attended an anti-Trump administration rally Saturday that, for the second time this month, drew an estimated 2,000 or 3,000 people to downtown Anchorage. Retired kindergarten teacher Maureen Tuskevich says she was never one for protests, but now has been to several. Tuskevich was at the Medicaid one thinking of her adult son who requires full-time care and benefits from Medicaid and other safety net programs.
I'm scared to death now that I work so hard fighting the red tape and everything that it's going to be taken away. And I'm almost 70, so I don't have many more years of the tape in front of me. And I need to make sure he's set up.
Begich voted for the $880 billion budget cut. He says he wants to eliminate government waste. Protesters say that amounts to about a third of the Medicaid budget and would slice deep into the medical insurance program that nearly 40% of Alaskans rely on. Begich staffer Denali Chewbacca greeted the protesters and handed out paper and clipboards so they could write messages. Begich wasn't in, so caregiver Catherine Nicholas made her case to his aide.
We really want to get the message across that this is a life and death situation, and every single one of us, we are not waste. There isn't a human being that is called waste. So the Trump administration really does need to know who we are and what we are doing and why we care, because we want people to live.
Yes, ma'am.
Chewbacca thanked the protesters and said she'd make sure to pass the message on to the congressman. The theme of the next protest at the congressional offices is education. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Some federal workers in Juneau were fired again this month after the Supreme Court declined to reverse the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the federal workforce. This comes after the employees were fired earlier this year, then reinstated last month. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, federal firings could hurt Southeast Alaska's economy.
Aaron Lambert was a fisheries management specialist at NOAA's Alaska Regional Office in Juneau when he was part of the national wave of terminations in February. He was reinstated and put on administrative leave with pay in March when a U.S. District Court judge in Maryland ruled that the firings at several agencies were illegal. But Lambert was fired again on April 10. He says his supervisors didn't know until he told them, and he hasn't received a separation package yet.
It's tough to make decisions right now. I honestly feel a little bit lost.
He's 41 years old. His wife works for the state, and his young daughter goes to daycare in the federal building downtown, where his old office is. Lambert says he's picked up some work at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in the lab where he did his graduate research, but has had to take a 50% pay cut.
Being back at the university, most of the graduate students there were all hoping to get federal jobs in the future, whether it's at NOAA or Fish and Wildlife Service or something similar to that. And the mood there is really not good. People aren't feeling great about their decision to go into science.
The federal workforce is a mainstay for Southeast Alaska's economy. According to numbers from Southeast Conference, a regional economic development organization, more than 2,000 federal jobs brought in nearly $200 million in earnings in 2023. In addition to the local economic effects of losing federal jobs, there are physical impacts when work goes undone. At NOAA, Lambert's job was to estimate how many salmon are in South Central's Cook Inlet and how many need to reproduce each year to support a sustainable fishery. He says that without enough staff monitoring fish stocks, certain fisheries may not open, or management decisions could be made with poor information. Federal agencies are also losing support staff, like Taylee Escalante. She was an administrative assistant at the National Weather Service in Juneau, where she was born and raised. Like Lambert, she was fired in February, reinstated in March, and fired again this month.
It really sucks feeling like I finally got like a really good job, and for it to just be like, it's not my own fault for it getting taken away.
She processed payroll and helped manage the budget. She says her job included finding ways for the office to save money. A vast majority of the land in Southeast is federally owned. Robert Venables, the executive director of Southeast Conference, says that influences every economic sector here, including recreation, timber, mining, and energy development.
We've seen the president say it's a priority of his administration to make the natural resources more readily available, and it's going to take federal personnel to do that.
The Supreme Court did not rule on the legality of the firings issued by the Trump administration, leaving that to be decided in lower courts where cases are pending. Federal agencies have not released a tally of the workers who were fired, nor have they reported reinstatements or refirings. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy may have upset China with a flight to Taiwan last month to pitch business and government leaders on Alaska's state-sponsored liquefied natural gas export project. The Northern Journal reports that the same day Dunleavy and other Alaska officials arrived on the unannounced trip, his office received an email from China's vice consul in San Francisco. The consulate was aware that Dunleavy was leading a trip to Taiwan, and Chinese government officials wanted a meeting with his chief of staff. Dunleavy had stepped into a simmering geopolitical conflict, an issue that China's government describes as the most important and sensitive in its relationship with the U.S. China claims Taiwan as its own territory and regularly conducts military drills nearby, including some that have simulated blockades and involved firing missiles over the island. The U.S. does not officially recognize Taiwan's independence, but its longtime ally sells arms to the government and has committed in legislation to support the island's defense. The Chinese government said in a written statement that Dunleavy's trip, quote, sends a very wrong signal to the Taiwan independence separatist forces, end quote, and it urged the governor to, quote, correct such mistakes and avoid their recurrence. In an interview with the Northern Journal, Dunleavy said, quote, I don't allow myself to get pushed around by too many entities or people, end quote. Dunleavy's trip to Taiwan last month came amid a new push by his administration to recruit investment in the $44 billion LNG development. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Bethel police officer receives an award for her quick response in saving a child's life.
It actually went out to the fire department, but I heard the call and I happened to be getting gas around the corner.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
New cases of HIV in Alaska over the past 5 years were highly preventable. That's according to a recent bulletin from the state's Section of Epidemiology. Data from cases over the past 5 years showed that most people diagnosed with HIV in the Anchorage and Matsu borough areas had seen a healthcare provider in the year before they acquired the virus. Liz Olson is a physician with the Section of Epidemiology. She says providers should screen their patients for vulnerability and provide information about PrEP.
We want people to know their HIV risk and to know that there's preventive medicine out there called pre-exposure prophylaxis. This is medicine that can be taken to prevent HIV.
PrEP can be taken as a pill or injection, and it's highly effective at preventing transmission of HIV. Olson says those most at risk for HIV infection are men who have sex with men, people who inject drugs, and anyone who has sex with someone with undiagnosed or untreated HIV. A rumor that agents from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency have been active in Sitka recently is based partly on the heightened presence of law enforcement officers in town for other training, and partly on actual ICE activity in Sitka last month. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
KCAW has learned that ICE did arrest and detain at least one person in Sitka last month. In a March 19th post on social media, Chief Patrol Officer Rosario Pete Vasquez wrote that Bellingham agents assigned to Alaska assisted ICE in arresting Cipriano Guerrero in Sitka. The post said that Guerrero, a Mexican citizen, was being held for removal to Mexico. According to ICE's public database, he's being held at a detention center in Tacoma. It's still unclear if ICE has had any presence in Sitka since that March arrest, although ICE posted information about an arrest made in Kodiak on April 14th. KCAW reached out to Immigration and Customs Enforcement for comment. David Yost is a public affairs officer for their Seattle field office. Yost would neither confirm nor deny whether immigration enforcement officers were active in Sitka since their March arrest. Sitka Police Department spokesperson Serena Wild told KCAW that ICE notified local police of their presence in March, but the department had received no notification this month. Sitka had a heightened law enforcement presence on April 16th and 17th due to a training session conducted by the Western States Information Network in partnership with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency. A representative from the network confirmed that around 40 law enforcement officers from across the state attended the training to learn how to investigate overdoses so dealers can be prosecuted. It's unclear if the heightened law enforcement presence contributed to concerns about local ICE activity. Sitka School District staff on April 17th were notified by email about how to handle interactions with agents, but the email was not prompted by any verified ICE activity in Sitka at the time. Sitka School District Superintendent Deidre Jensen said that the email was a reminder about protocols for interactions with ICE, whose agents have entered schools in the lower 48. She told KCAW, quote, "It's really just us being prepared." She said that no one would ever be allowed to remove a child from a school without proper legal authority and documentation. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Many of Alaska's coastal villages are experiencing the existential threat posed by human-caused climate change more acutely than almost anywhere on the planet. Researchers say parts of Alaska are warming up to four times faster than other places on Earth. And while intense storms, rapidly eroding coastlines, and thawing permafrost wreak havoc on their homes, rural residents are grappling with the impacts to infrastructure. That struggle is captured in a new documentary called Alaska's Vanishing Native Villages from the PBS program Frontline, out tomorrow for Earth Day. It follows correspondent Patty Talhangva as she examines the reality on the ground in some of Alaska's most far-flung and vulnerable villages. Talahangva says some of the most meaningful conversations she had were with the kids in those villages, including Hooper Bay, one of many hit hard by Typhoon Mirbok in the fall of 2022.
And they were telling me how stressful it was to experience Mirbok, and it turned their village into three islands, and they couldn't get across the water to their relatives' homes to check on them to see how they were doing. You know, they saw houses being lifted up and turned around, and then, of course, damage to other houses. So that's a lot of stress to live under. But yeah. I asked the kids, you know, think about, you're in high school today, in 50 years, where do you think you'll be living? And some of them said probably Anchorage, because they're seeing that, and what is their future?
Yeah, no doubt. It's fair to say in some of those places, either relocation efforts are already happening, like in Nutok, in Muktuvik. Some places are still just talking about that. And I thought one thing that was really interesting about the film was just that relocating is not just about moving the physical things of the village up to higher ground. There's like an emotional thing going on there too, in this history of displacement. I wondered if you could talk about that.
We do touch on that in the film, because as Native people, you know, and I'm Hopi, that we understand the forced relocation by government policies. And that's what happened to one tribe that lives in Hooper Bay today, and that's the Native village of Paiute. So in the film, it's explained how when the government agents came in and said, you have to move to Hooper Bay, there's a school there, your kids have to go to school. What happened was it split up the village. So we have that history of relocation. And that's hard for all of our tribes because, again, our connection to the land. And it's very clear in the film, the connection to the land that the people in the different villages have. So they know their land, they know their water, they know the foods they need to harvest, you know, at any given time of the year, whether it's from the sea or whether it's from the land. And when you have to relocate, that connection has that potential for being severed.
Yeah. There's a man that you talked to in the film. He was involved in relocation efforts, and he talks about how difficult it is and how many different agencies have to be involved. And he mentions that there really is no central agency for this kind of complicated relocation effort. Did that surprise you, that there just really isn't any kind of central agency that deals with this?
That was surprising. Because, you know, you want to go and ask the people in charge, you know, what's going on? And there was no one agency. So we asked many agencies, what's going on? And the man you're talking about is Max Neal, and he is with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. So he told us, I think we didn't use the exact number, but it's more than 80 different steps to relocation, and how each village that's in danger has to follow, you know, step one, step two, and the first step is identifying land, which another expert, Tom Ravens, explained that most of the interior there is marshy due to the permafrost and all the ponds of water. So it's not easy to find land to move to. And then, of course, then you have to look at who owns the land. So I think people will be surprised at that, how marshy that area of Alaska is, and why that is compounding the problem with finding locations to move to.
Toward the end of the film, I think it is at the end of the film, we return to Kotzebue, which of course is kind of a larger hub community in that region. And we find out that a huge storm has breached the seawall that cost millions and millions of dollars. And of course, this is happening in smaller communities that don't have seawalls, that don't have the resources for that sort of thing. And as the film ends on that, I wonder, is there any hope? I mean, is it just that we're left kind of wondering, like, what happens next?
That's a question we asked the people. And the answer was, you know, we're resilient, we're going to figure it out. And, you know, they've lived there, they know their land, and now they're having to make changes. But that's one thing, you know, it's not that poor them, it's they're talking about how resilient they are. And for me to look at the situation and again say, gosh, this is really stressful, that's my observation. And to talk to the people, they were very adamant that we know this land, we know who we are, and we will survive, and we will continue.
That was Patty Talahongva, who directed and produced Alaska's Vanishing Villages, a documentary film from the PBS program Frontline, debuting tomorrow on Earth Day.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
Are you responsible for a growing team of healthcare workers? Now's the time to invest in your team. When you enroll by June 30th, the Alaska Primary Care Association will cover the full cost of training and apprenticeship programs to help your employees get certified, advance their skills, and stay within your organization. Visit AlaskaHealthcareCareers.com to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Primary Care Association.
A Kenai Peninsula environmental nonprofit has been hosting Shark Tank-style events to solicit and help the community pick small-scale projects to back. KDLL's Hunter Morrison followed the latest round, which will lead to protections for local salmon habitat.
Okay. Everybody voted? It'll take a couple minutes to count them.
Yellow sticky notes fill a glass jar branded with a Cook Inlet Keeper sticker. The small crowd at the nonprofit's studio in Soldotna was voting on pitches they just heard for competing salmon conservation plans. It's part of the environmental group's Local Solutions series, which has previously led to small-scale solar and composting projects on the Kenai Peninsula. Now, it's looking to protect juvenile salmon.
I think especially here in the Central Peninsula, so much of our of what we are involved with as a community centers around salmon.
That's David Knight, Cook Inlet Keeper's Community Engagement Coordinator. He says he's seen diminishing salmon returns in recent years.
It is personal because, you know, growing up here and having that resource right out the back door is something that I would never want to see lost.
One of the approved salmon projects is to expand the Kenai Watershed Forum's mapping of local salmon habitat. The environmental nonprofit's goal is to increase the number of streams and rivers protected by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Ben Meyer, an environmental scientist with the Watershed Forum, pitched the idea.
Right now, our laws are set up so that we presume waters are not salmon habitat unless somebody goes and demonstrates otherwise. There are good reasons for that, but it also means that there's a lot of work to do if we want to recognize where all these places are.
His pitch tied with one to put educational signs in known salmon habitat areas around the peninsula. Each sign would have a QR code leading to a web page or video explaining the site's importance and restoration history. Mitch Michaud is that initiative's brainchild. He says it'll be a scavenger hunt, like Pokemon Go or geocaching.
You know, I think people have an intrinsic need to learn, even though they'll say, oh, I don't really need to know this. But once they get a taste of knowing about the biology and the culture of an area, then it just grows in their appetite. It increases their appetite for more stuff.
Because of the tie vote, the nonprofit plans to combine both into one larger project. Knight, Cook Inlet Keeper's Community Engagement Coordinator, says the two ideas go hand in hand.
You know, anything we can do to protect what we have remaining and enhance what we have, I think is important to do for the sake of the future of salmon in this area, which our whole lives revolve around.
Later this month, Cook Inlet Keeper support staff and community members will begin planning out how to make it happen within a 2-year time frame. In Soldotna, I'm Hunter Morrison.
A Bethel police detective has received one of local law enforcement's highest honors for saving a child's life. As KYUK's Samantha Watson reports, Detective Cordoba was recognized for her quick action and compassion at a recent city council meeting.
When Bethel Police Detective Daniela Cordoba got the call in mid-January, she says she didn't think twice.
It actually went out to the fire department, but I heard the call and I happened to be getting gas around the corner.
An 11-month-old baby in Bethel was choking and had gone unresponsive.
When I got there, I just went into like full what I know how to do. I didn't even think about it.
Cordoba says she performed back blows, compressions, and a finger sweep on the child. Soon, color returned to his face and he began to cry.
That's when fire department arrived. I followed them to the hospital and she has, the younger daughter was with her and mom was just so obviously very stressed out with the situation. So I was kind of helping play with the little girl while mom's talking to doctors and stuff.
The baby was okay. Today, he cries and babbles from the laps of his parents from the back of the Bethel City Council chambers. Detective Cordoba is being honored with a life-saving award. Members of the police and fire departments spill into the room. Bethel Public Safety Director James Harris addresses the council.
Today we celebrate Officer Cordoba, not just for her swift response and her heroic actions, but also for her embodying the values we cherish in our community. Compassion, courage, dedication to service.
Cordoba started on Bethel's police force this past September. She splits her time between the Los Angeles Police Department in California in a 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off rotation.
Honestly, it's very, like, emotional. I wasn't expecting it, and I wasn't expecting all of the fire department to show up and all of my coworkers to show up, because some of them came in early from their shift to be here. I didn't know the baby was going to be here, so like that was also very pretty emotional to see him and seeing the mom like calm in a different sense.
Harris presents Cordoba with a medal.
This is one of the highest awards that can be given to a police officer, is the life-saving medal, and I am proud to bestow it on you.
Harris says the award isn't just about Cordoba's life-saving action. It's also about her compassion for the family. She stayed with them for over an hour until a local religious leader arrived to support the family. An award similar to its kind was last bestowed to a BPD officer 5 years ago, in 2020. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage, Alex Solomon in Juneau, Catherine Rose in Sitka, Hunter Morrison in Soldotna, and Samantha Watson in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
It is time for you to stop all of your sobbing. Yes, it's time for you to stop all of your sobbing. Oh, oh. There's one thing you gotta do to make me still want you. Gotta stop sobbing now. Yeah. Stop, stop, stop. to laugh instead of cry. Yes, it's time for you to laugh, so keep on trying. Oh, there's one thing you gotta do to make me still want you. Gotta stop sobbing now.
Yeah. Love don't change. world, you'll still hold me close when you see me, and you still make me know that you need me. And I know sometimes don't believe me, but you stay on my mind, so believe me. Cause you have my heart, don't break it.
Oh no, don't break it, girl.
When times get tough, don't leave me. And it all adds up, we gon' make it.
Gotta make it.
Cause when you mad, I know, can't fake it. And baby, sometimes I can tell just by your face, this part of us been gone for so long.
So long.
And I know there's no replacing what we had going on for so long. I can tell just by your face, this part of us been gone for so long. And I know there's no replacing what we had going on for so long. But when it hurts, I can make it better. Girl, if it works, it's gonna be forever. We've been through the worst, made it through the weather, our problems and the pain.
Come to you.
Don't tell your mother. Kiss one another. Die for each other. We're cool for the summer.
Somebody, swear this man is begging me to leave him. Getting sick of being
Make the best.